"It is past time that we reviewed the figures, my lady," he said. "You'll want to know how much this royal visit cost us." Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. To episode 276 of the White Book, and you know, we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel for quotes these days.
Review the figures, huh?
Yeah, it's evidently literally the only time that the word review is used in the first five books of A Song of Ice and Fire.
I'm sure so, that's probably false.
Interesting. Well, then their search engine is broken.
Well, speaking of figures, we were just, well, at least I was intrigued by Chris Schoenthal's post about My Little Pony-themed Warhammer 40k Space Marine Army, and I kind of went down the rabbit hole looking at other themed armies for sale on eBay, and I don't play miniatures, but some of them were pretty sweet.
Yeah, there's some impressive stuff. I mean, the My Little Ponies, from what I could see in the preview picture there, looked pretty killer, so...
Oh, dude, they were awesome.
Are the other ones up to that same, like, quality level?
No, because the My Little Pony ones, like, legitimately are My Little Pony figures, and the other ones are just, like painted with logos or to, like, try to mimic, you know, color schemes and that sort of thing. The My Little Pony one is head and shoulders above the rest, and it sold for $1,800.
Jeez. Well, listeners, welcome to the White Book podcast, your favorite My Little Pony miniatures, speculation, secondary market.
Yeah, you may need to cut that part.
No, it's fine. I think the listeners really need to know up front what they're getting this week, which is just kind of random BS. This week, it is myself, Will, and Luke, and we are doing our 2016 recap show, or our review show, you might say, hence me searching for a quote that used that word. And, we've got a few things that we want to hit on. We had some listener suggestions and different things to kind of kick around. So in some ways, I think this is going to be a little bit like a episode-long props and slops. And, you know, so I wanted the listeners to be able to turn this off right at the outset if they wanted to.
Yeah, that should also be cut. Well, what the hell? No, we want people to...
Man, I thought you turned on your mic because you had a witty rejoinder there.
No, I turned on my mic because I was like, no, we want people to listen to this, whatever this is.
It's supposed to be a running gag, Luke.
Oh, is that where we're going? Well, you should probably cut that too, then.
It's fine. This episode may wind up being the closest to a Raw Dog episode I've done in years.
Wow, we just dropped a Raw Dog within the first 4 minutes of recording.
I had to give a little nod to Kyle since he wasn't able to make it. So
was it bareback by chance? Okay, you probably need to cut that too.
Okay, well that's fair. So I'm sure we'll throw in references to other co-hosts as we go. We're going to go ahead and hit a couple things up front here at the top of the show. And one of the first ones that I wanted to do, listeners may note that it's been 3 months now since we started the Patreon fund, which has been very awesome. You guys have gone beyond covering our costs here and have allowed me to purchase a couple new headsets for folks and to go ahead and get a couple new pieces of token art commissioned, as well as some more tokens printed. So those will be those should be in later this month and posted for sale to the website. But at the 3 month mark, we hit the first of our reward milestones for our supporters. So first up are the supporters that have supported us for 3 months who get an on-air thanks. Now, I'm not sure that everyone is okay with me airing their full names on the web, so I'm actually just going to go with full name and last initial. So hopefully that will kind of keep things neutral there, shall we say. So Tobias R., Adrian S.
Can I guess who they are?
Oh, you want to guess?
I mean, I don't know if I know any of these people, but I'm just saying if I hear a name that I might recognize, can I guess who they are?
I guess. Will you also guess for the other ones and just make up something ludicrous?
Maybe.
Okay, let's try it with the first one. Tobias R.
I'm not good at this game, Will.
Oh man, nothing for Adrian S.
I mean, no, I really was only like a single track mind on this.
There's just one of these names that you'll recognize.
I just don't want to insult people, especially if they're giving us money.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to try to be neutral with this.
Yeah. Well. This is why they pay you the big bucks, Will. All that podcast money.
All that sweet podcast money. All the 3 months of it.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying, like, you know how Banter was the ones who were super rich, getting super super rich off those spoilers and everything. They got nothing on us now.
Accents. You get paid a premium for those.
Yeah, but they got nothing on us now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, rolling in it. You hear that, Dave? Craven, Peel, yeah. In terms of who's rolling in it, in terms of the race for dollars, yeah, killing it.
Aren't they probably racing for pounds?
Well, then we're definitely winning because we're not even operating on the same currency, and I just said dollars. So yeah, we're definitely winning.
All right, moving on from those forced jokes. We've also got Tom.
You could cut that too, probably.
No, the listeners will love it. They'll eat it up. Then we've also have Tom C, Chris S, James H, Michael L, Corbin L, and we actually have a business supporting us, Uncle's Games.
Isn't that the one that's in Springfield?
No, they are out on the West Coast in the Seattle area.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Patrick that we've had on the show.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Sure enough.
No, y'all play metagames, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, need to get them to support us. Then, as well. So huge, huge thanks and kind of a pre-props to all of those folks for helping out, as well as others that haven't quite hit that 3-month mark. But as well, there's a secondary 3-month milestone for folks at the top of the support scale there as far as dollar amounts go. So I'm sure I'll reach out to you guys directly as well, but I want to throw out here on the episode that Corbin L. and Patrick over at Uncle's Games are also going to get to record some personal props and slops and send in for me to work into an episode coming up. So be on the lookout, guys, and we will discuss that very soon. All right. I guess we're on to our next one. So the next bit that we've got here in our variety show, our medley, our, I don't know, our vaudeville act. Wait, vaudeville's dead, right?
Thankfully.
Yeah. Dang. I always liked the hats. Yes.
So you're lamenting the loss of, like, systematic, like exploitation of people with physical deformities and disabilities.
Whoa.
Vaudeville was
more
like,
thinking the, you know, vaudevillian song and dance rather than
I thought you were thinking about like the traveling shows.
Yeah.
I thought you were thinking about like the traveling shows. I was like,
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Whoa.
I was like, wait a second, Will, we're not on the same page.
No, but hey, you know, I think I could make it in there as the amazing bearded man, though, so I think it'd be pretty good.
Yeah, but you, like, cut your beard.
I mean, I did. I lost most of my strength to go with it. It was very disappointing, and I had to apologize to the community at large, but thankfully, maybe I'll post a picture here soon. It is back in full force now, so.
That's what's up.
Exactly. But speaking of full force, and I don't know, humorous things and song and dance. Actually, if someone does turn this into a song and dance, this bit is going to be amazing. I wanted to have another contest while we are on holiday break this year. Last year we stole an idea from, I want to say sister show, but more like, Redheaded Stepchild Show, Cardboard at the Rings.
Cardboard at the Rings, yeah.
Yeah. And held a meme contest. And so I would like to do that again this year. So this episode...
Did you listen to their last episode?
Oh, no, I have not been able to yet. Did I miss something good?
Yeah, so I feel like we should probably get Aaron on and just do what they did. Or not really. Aaron would be boring because he would just, like... He would just shit all over the game, and it wouldn't be a big deal. But basically, they just like kept trying to come up with man with a gun to your head scenarios, trying to get. Was it Sean?
Wait, would you play with this bad card? Who's the kind
one?
Of thing?
No. Who's the one who's doing the podcast for Arkham Horror? Is it Sean?
Yes, I think so.
So they basically They were just coming up with a bunch of scenarios to get him to try to say that he would play Arkham Horror over Lord of the Rings. And so, like,
yeah, that wouldn't work with Aaron. He would just say, "Yeah, I would play all of these things over Game of Thrones."
Yeah, I would say we could have Patrick on, but it's like almost 10 o'clock, so he's been in bed for at least 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's probably in bed, but I doubt he's asleep, right? Like, he's probably been fighting it for a while.
Yeah, it's massive power struggle with mommy and daddy.
Yeah, exactly. This is great. We're just going to crap on all of our co-hosts while they're not here, aren't we?
Well, they're not here.
Yeah, they bailed on us. They can have revenge next year.
I guess, yeah, this is sort of the end of the season, isn't it?
Sort of. Technically, the end of our seasons is World Championships. So it is a little weird the way it lines up with being right before the holidays and end of year break. But oh well, we'll make it work.
Okay,
so,
then
back to the contest. Focus, Lee.
So back to the contest, meme contest. Last year, we stole the idea from Cardboard Rings, decided that it was a blast, and we would like to do it again while we are on break. So here's the deets, guys. This episode is going to wind up airing on Friday, the 16th of December. You have until the stroke of midnight at the end of this year to submit. You're going to submit your favorite meme to the contact at White Book Podcast email address. Submit them by email. Don't post them to our page because we need the voting to be blind, okay? Now, there's a catch with the memes. You aren't just sending anything our way. You're going to be sending something Game of Thrones or White Book related. That could be game related. I'm looking forward to the Storm of Arbor memes. It's going to be great. Or it could be show related. I don't know. Maybe you want to do something fun with Ramsay Bolton. Who doesn't? Maybe you just want to give us crap.
I just want all of the memes about Patrick being a child and Aaron being a curmudgeon. That's all I want.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we got.
You immediately get my vote if you do those things. Sorry,
man. Will. You know, I'm trying to think about it. I guess the rest of us just don't really have super defining traits. Maybe some kind of meme about Roy being too nice, or maybe being a cowboy.
Oh, a cowboy. Yeah. We'll expand the Game of Thrones universe to include dovetails with loose ties to the Wild West.
Yes.
So long as Rogers makes its way in.
Yeah, it's like the Kevin Bacon of Game of Thrones, right? As long as you can tie it back to Roy Rogers, then you're okay.
I'm trying to think. If you want to joke on like a specific meta, or if I really want to see some Europeans come in and just like slam the North American players, because that'd be really fun, and vice versa, start an international war. I don't know. That's a pretty broad range of things, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think folks will be able to do nearly whatever their heart desires.
Can we say what won last year?
Yeah. I mean, you were pretty excited about it a little bit ago, so why don't you lay it on the folks?
Yeah, still one of the best things that the White Book has done ever is that first meme contest, and the one that won was, you know that really popular meme with the... It's, like, I forget what they call that guy. What is that guy's name? Do you know? The guy with the backwards hat and, like, the big jacket. And he's just, like, standing in the doorway.
Yeah.
I forget the name. I'm terrible at memes, so I probably will not be creating one. But anyway, they basically substitute that and put the hat on Varys. And in big letters it says, "Is a eunuch, still fucks everyone." And this was, like, in the... sort of early days of the corset, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's when Varys was, like, everywhere.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty glorious. So, what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and collate all those, and then after the first of the year, I'm going to drop them all into an album on our Facebook page. Announce it to folks so you can come find it. And folks are going to be voting on these by liking the images. I mean, yes, that does mean you can vote on multiple ones. That's okay. Because, in fact, we're going to have a winner. And we've got enough prizes this year to do a runner-up prize for the meme contest. So I'm excited about that.
I'm also down to see all of the first edition elitist memes.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I'm probably not going to participate
in that. So we're gonna give folks once those are up, we will have 1 week of voting open on them after that. So ideally, I get them put up on New Year's Day, but there is the chance that it winds up being on the 2nd. Whichever day that winds up being, we will vote for.
Oh, you may also automatically win if you have a Joe from Cincinnati meme.
Yeah, man, but how many people are going to do that now that you told them?
I don't know. Or a Brotherhood Without Manners one that I... It was, yeah, so...
I mean, I imagine they're going to be submitting some doozies, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty excited about this meme contest. Given all of... And given, like, because there's so many possibilities, like, trolling the Facebook group and the way that, like, threads got locked and... Oh, man, it's going to be fantastic.
Yep.
And then, like, and then the guy from My Meta, Chris Thompson, throwing his copies of The Arbor in the trash. Like, oh, do you remember that?
No, I didn't remember that one.
Oh, God, it generated, like, hundreds of comments. He posted just, like, a 5-second video of, after The Arbor ruling was made official, he just took his 3-sleeved copies of The Arbor over to the trash can and just dropped them in.
Oh, jeez.
And so I keep telling him to create more videos of him just throwing stuff away.
Just random things. Like that sounds like a great YouTube channel right there. Just him throwing away, like, McDonald's wrappers.
No, all Thrones related. All Thrones related.
No, I mean, I think that could have some real broad appeal if he kind of...
Well, Chris, you heard it here. You heard it here. Props for the throwing in the trash video. We want more.
So what are folks fighting over? I'm sure they're really beginning to wonder at this point what the prize is. And the first prize, the winner prize, is going to be a house card from the Citadel Quartermaster folks. They sent a couple samples over to our Patrick, who should be laying a review on us sometime here soon. So one of those is going to be up for a prize. I believe it is Tyrell.
Did they make sure to not include small parts so he doesn't choke?
Oh, gosh. Maybe that's why I haven't heard from him all week. Oh, man. So
I might have to enter the contest now because I want one of them.
Yeah, exactly. In brief nutshell, I would say they look pretty sweet, but I'll let Patrick detail more than that. And our runner-up prize is actually almost more exciting to me. I'll have to post a picture of that. A while back, I bought some house cards from across the pond and got a little bonus thrown in with them, so that we could use them for a contest. I figured I would kind of sit on them for this one. And that is 3 copies of an alternate art / alternate title promo card that they've done that is Put to the Needle, which
pretty
awesome.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah. So we'll try to make sure we get pictures of both of those prizes up on the page here relatively soon as well.
Oh, speaking of alternate art, you see that all the Indie Thrones cards are just smashing it in the art contest.
Yeah. You guys are killing it. Way to be.
That first snow of winter, though.
You do good work.
It's the one with cold hands.
Oh, I remember you sending me that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty legit. Sorry, Minnesota Thrones, your joke Dragon Fear didn't win. It's okay because they're also like half the field, so yeah.
Wow, now I feel even worse for forgetting to and letting time creep away from me and not submitting. So needed some diversity in the field.
Yeah, sucks to suck, dude.
Yeah, man, story of my life.
And if we're in the mood to bash co-host Tommy, I like our Crown of Gold better.
There you go.
Just so you know.
Spreading the love. Gotta make sure we get everybody in there at some point.
I'm being a dick tonight.
It's equal opportunity. Okay, so I think maybe we're probably good to go ahead and move on to our next segment, which is I think the majority of this particular episode. And that's going to be kind of our retrospective on the year and looking forward to next year and everything. And to kind of formulate this, I hit up Facebook and the Patreon supporters only section of the Discord chat so that we could get some requests for what folks really wanted us to hit on. So I think Luke and I are going to just dive right in here, and the very first thing that folks wanted from us were spoilers. So, Luke, why don't you read those? And there you have it, listeners.
That's it.
Yeah, we don't have any. Sorry. I wish we did. Honestly, I wish we did. You know, I thought that maybe we could make that funnier, but I'm actually just a little depressed.
I mean, yeah, I don't know how to. Yeah. There's no salvaging that. You may want to cut that too, Will.
Yeah, just completely. Okay, that's fine. Well, I guess we will just move on from there, and I'm going to rearrange the order of these just a teensy bit from how they were in the. In the outline, Luke, so my apologies, but I think we decided this next item we were going to kick to the end so that it flowed better. So I'm going to go ahead and jump over here to a request we had for a passionate debate between two positions, and conveniently, there are two of us. So position one is, Valor is the worst, I hate this game, and I hate you for playing it, versus... Only in the death and suffering of my opponents can I find joy. So, Luke, would you rather hate this game and the people that play Valor, or would you rather love suffering?
Okay, like not to like disparage a listener, but I think this is a poorly worded question because I think that like there is a, I think that like the hate of Valor. By an overwhelming majority of the community isn't because they're getting wrecked by it and they just hate it. Right? Like, but for the sake of argument, I will take the pro-Valor one, only the death of suffering. Yeah, I'll take that one.
Oh, great. You're going to make me argue a position I don't believe in. This is tough. This is tough.
I can argue that position.
I'm going to be honest.
I can argue the other position and just, like, modify it to what I think's probably a more realistic conversation people are having.
Yeah. Should I throw out there, by the way, that debate was the one class that I applied for in high school that I was denied? I don't really know what to do here.
Whatever, man. You were awesome on the Cardboard of the Rings episode where you were in the law offices.
We need to, number one, I need to appear on that show to do law offices again with those guys. And number two, we need to have law offices make an appearance over here.
Agreed. Yeah, for sure.
Glorious.
We'll wait for another time when everybody abandons us, since you and I think are the only ones that play Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But we still need one other person to maybe be our judge if you and I are going to argue opposite sides.
Yeah, seems legit.
Okay.
So I guess I'll take the anti-Valor side and
yeah.
And I'll okay. All right. Okay. Well, again, I guess it should be known.
I can do anti.
No, it's okay. It should be known that I am with Will and I don't believe in this position, but I will argue it the best I can.
Okay. All right. Tell you what, anti should probably be first, I would suppose, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess I don't really understand, like, I guess I'll grant that that it's really thematic, and, like, Game of Thrones is all about being vulnerable and being able to die at any point, but, like, to me it just sort of seems like it's placating first edition players, and they wanted it back, and we got it, and not only that, it seems to me that there's, like, a fundamental flaw with the game that you have to print on-demand board wipes.
I love that you actually kind of argued for it as part of your argument against it. Oh man, the listeners are
dang it, Will.
Yeah, it's fine. Because I think
I already said that. I already said that I actually don't believe in this.
I know, it's great. I mean, because my rebuttal is going to be first edition had it. There you go. Boom. Mic dropped.
That's totally fair. And so did the CCG.
Yeah. No, I mean I think there's more to it there. And I think part of that is in response to your issue with the game needing it and the fact that Game of Thrones does need it because it is virtually the only like character combat based game without like direct damage and destruction of opposing units or characters or creatures or whatever it may be. You have magic or Hearthstone or something. There's a natural attrition to every single combat that's in a very direct ratio that just doesn't exist in Game of Thrones with the military challenge. And so these type of mass resets are necessary, and it turns out that there's a very thematic phrase to represent that. Valor Morghulis.
Okay, so I have an issue with like the attrition is not enough. So there were already a ton of Get 'em Down to Zero decks available before Valor came out, and
okay. Can you explain Get 'em Down to Zero
deck? Okay, so a Get 'em Down to Zero deck is a gotcha deck where basically if you draw better than the opponent and you have enough targeted kill in your hand with big guys on the board, regardless of what faction that is, without having to really like pull off a lot of tricks, you can essentially point and click your way into a march to the wall and clear the board, at which point they might not be able to recover. And there were already two other resets before that, which could help that happen by getting the board smaller. And so let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Like, Valor...
Literally your job.
Yeah, so, like, Valor is... Like, I can give you all of the good for the game, and it shakes up certain things, but, like, we're already seeing that the meta is going to adjust, and people are literally just cramming their deck with a bunch of saves and diluting their deck even more, and while you might contend that that increases variance because you don't have as much... have any effects, I would argue that the game is already variance-based because of your lack of economy or your surplus of economy. So if you... Valor essentially helps houses or factions that can already produce money or can survive without a bunch of money, and it just pushes the other ones toward the bottom of the pot.
Okay, but I mean... I don't expect the card pool at like any single point in time to have reached a like pure equilibrium. I just don't think that's realistic. But we are seeing these additional income options coming up for the other kind of off houses, so to speak, the ones where, you know, big income and resources are not a faction flavor, i.e. Lannister and Tyrell. And you're seeing, you know, Bear got that non-limited location that I forget the name of now, as did
Stone Drum.
Greyjoy. Yes, thank you. As did Greyjoy. Admittedly, they're not all killers, but I do think the Greyjoy one is solid enough for a copy in a lot of Greyjoy decks. And we've seen the spoiler coming up, coming up out of Beyond the Wall, of that new Davos from next cycle that's going to have the ability to generate some challenge phase gold, which kind of treads into that ground that Tyrion, Corset Tyrion, has had, that folks have complained about, you know, being such a big draw to Lannister. So I think it does look like, you know, FFG and the designers and developers are moving toward a position to account for that. It's just not instantaneous.
Yeah, but I'm arguing like from the current viewpoint, and like I can totally understand why somebody would hate this game if they got absolutely screwed over by a Valor because they just so happened to not draw their dupes, or they didn't get a King's Road early enough, or they didn't set up a Rose Road. You know what I mean? Like, I would hate to be in a position where, like, on turn two, I see my opponent's got two non-unique mid-range guys and a dupe of a key character, and I've got my big, important, like, centerpiece characters out, and I just know, like, and there's nothing I can do about it, that they're going to flip Valor, and even if I run a close call, that I'm only going to be able to get one of these really important guys back into my deck, and then I have to draw into it again. I can totally see why people hate it. But more importantly, like, it really does sort of just become a game of, like, can you draw cards, and did you set up a Rose Road, or the Arbor, or whatever, and I can see why people don't like that.
Okay, what about the flip side of this, though? Like, the game I played over the weekend, I'm sitting there with my Rinky Dink Tyrell deck, and I've got a friggin', I always forget his name, the 5-3 Military and Intrigue, discard the lowest strength character in play.
House Florentine?
Thank you, yeah. I'm sitting there with
You're not a real Tyrell fanboy. You're not a real.
I know. They weren't worth trying until Valor.
Disagreedo. Disagreedo. No.
The
Sun Garden deck that I ran three copies.
Okay. So I'm sitting there with one of them on the board versus my Bera Lion opponent, who has an unprotected Tyrion, Robert, Melisandre, and some kind of chud. It was probably a Fiery Followers, because I do remember him getting a kneel off of Melisandre. So, like, pre-Valor, like, what's my real hope of getting back into that game? It's just not there.
What did you have for what did you have for economy?
At that point, I think I had two Rose Roads.
Okay, so you have a 4-gold Valor turn. Not the worst thing in the world, especially in Tyrell. Did you have Highgarden on the board?
I did not. But that's what I'm saying. Even without a huge thing, that still gave me the chance to try and get back into it. Whereas pre-Valor, like, his setup, despite the fact that he didn't have dupes on any of those, is just kind of the, like, backbreaking setup that you can't do anything about. You know, your Varus isn't gonna live long enough. Wildfire is still leaving Robert, Mel, and Tyrion on the board. Whatever you play afterward at that point gets knelt. Valor's a way to try to make it back into those games.
Yeah. Imagine if you didn't draw a Rose Road. What would you do? And you
then had a bad game went to worse, but
okay. And how many times
bad game go to better?
But how many times have you played this game where you looked at your setup and you were like, this is okay. I'm gonna mulligan, and then you get almost the exact same thing, zero economy.
Fun.
And how many games have you played? How many games have you played where your opponent drew a King's Road before you did and was able to get a body down to win a key challenge that you were playing your best game to maneuver around, and you just couldn't find the money, and you could, and then you didn't have the card draw because you couldn't win challenges, and you flip a Valor and you've got no claim, and they just play out a couple mid-range dudes and just still stomp you. I think that, like, there is a, and to me, this is the conversation that I think people are going to be having about Valor. That, and then I also think that it pushes the meta into, at least temporarily, I think that people will actually calm down off of this position after a while, but it pushes the meta into a position where people are just running Banner Kraken, or playing Greyjoy main, or they're playing Stark, which is a sneaky good Valor, anti-Valor deck. Or even Night's Watch, really. I mean, like, and Lannister is still good because of the economy you can generate and the, like, card quality that you have, even if some of your main uniques die. I have a feeling that it could end up pushing the meta into another standstill until we get something else.
I'm not 100% certain by what you mean as standstill here, just like one or two, you know, fairly dominant decks, or what do you think?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't actually believe this, by the way, but I'm just saying that I could
don't
I could,
tell the listeners that
I could see people being like, wow, I really hate this game, because for about a month or so here, while people are getting used to it and figuring out how to play with it and against it, that they'll see like the same three or four decks over and over and over and over and over again. Like I was talking to Schoenthal the other day, and he took a deck that I actually built to a local tournament, and he went 3-1, and he played against four straight Greyjoy players. And it was like a field of like 12 or 13. So I could see people being like, "Wow, I really wish this didn't come out right now."
I don't know. I have a feeling that there's a good chance we're going to just start going round in circles at this point, because a decent part of it is kind of opinion on where exactly the healthy point of a meta is.
Personally, I really love Valor, and I like, so I think we're sort of getting off of this like conjured up debate, because I personally really like Valor's existence in the game, and I've had more fun playing Thrones in the past few weeks since it's been released and seen it out in the wild than I have in months and months and months. I mean, it's like playing a whole new game, because while it may not change deck building that much, like, there are certain decks that are running more saves than they would normally, but it changes the play style, right? Like, it really teaches you to conserve and manage your resources.
It forces a pacing that I think is better. Like, I was playing against one of our newer players this weekend who has never played Valor before, and one of our other first edition vets was sitting next to him and kind of talking about the game as it went and everything. And was kind of talking to him about, hey, you know, are you sure you also want to play that Mel? Like, you've already got Robert. Turns out Bera has taken a real big push in our meta at the moment. But he already had this.
Not surprising, yeah.
He already had this pretty wide board. He's like, man, you know, if you play that Mel, he's just going to play Valor next turn and whatever. And it was just interesting watching this other guy. I was trying not to weigh into it too much since I was playing that game, but even though it was a funsies game, but it was interesting having him having someone kind of walk through with him like the implications of having something in the meta that forces you to not just always slam every power card as fast as you can and just keep like an insurmountable balls to the wall like pressure on, which I think is good. Even if Valor isn't played at that time, I think it's good to keep people pacing themselves, because it does keep game, or at least the potential for games, to be closer and for other folks to claw back in. In fact, in this example, I was not actually playing Valor. Had another hand in why I didn't weigh in on the topic.
I think the pacing.
But I understood the reason. Helped me, you know, stay in.
Yeah, I think the pacing is a good point, because I find that boards are smaller, so challenge phase math isn't as arduous. And
yes,
and I think that even though you may go through 8 or 9 plots, you're still only playing, you know, an hour long game. Which is interesting in and of itself, because for me, the thing that I really love about it is that it's making me think 2 to 3 plots ahead like I used to when I was playing way back in the day. You know, like what could be in the plot deck, and if I've seen all the plot deck, what could be coming back. Rather than... There was a point in the game here where it was very solitaire, right? Like, you just... You played whatever plot was advantageous for you, or disadvantageous for your opponent, and you just slammed cards down and turned them sideways. And I think that Valor really makes a huge difference in that regard. Like, your planning for 2 to 3 turns ahead is huge, meaning you can bait people into meaningless challenges. You can trading with the Pentoshi takes on a whole new meaning. The idea of Varus's riddle and that becoming more prevalent, and seeing if if you miss on a Varus's riddle because they think that you might be playing it, and like that plot game feels like it's starting to come back, and I like that a lot.
And the plot game, so to speak, I think is a big draw and part of what makes Thrones unique and fun.
Yeah, I've been playing a Targ burn deck lately, and it's my favorite deck in the meta right now. I just really, really love it, and I stuck Valor in. We were originally testing with Valor as an 8 plot in every single deck that we took to the table, and just ticked off how many times we used it and whether or not it was a good fit for that deck. But I finally pulled the trigger on this particular deck. I was like, we'll see what happens. I don't want to run it as an 8th plot anymore. I want to make that choice and see if there's ever a point where I'm like, oh crap, I have to Valor myself now. And it worked out okay. It felt like playing Valor of old. Valor early and often, right? I feel like people sometimes may wait a little bit too long to make sure they have the maximum advantage, and I feel like you may not need the maximum advantage to be able to just cripple an opponent and lock a game down. Likewise, you may not necessarily need to wait until the opponent totally overextends in order to punish them properly.
Again, all about kind of proper pacing, right?
Yep. I think Valor is good for the game. little side note, anybody who was at Origins knows that when that was spoiled, everybody was playing their last games to get into the graduated cut, and everybody was bemoaning the stat line, or they were bemoaning its very existence and being like, oh my god, this card, why does it even exist, and blah blah blah. And I was just walking around with this huge smile on my face, like, it has 5 reserve, I'm totally playing this card.
Yeah, tentatively at the moment, I think 5 is the right place to put it. Not, not too big, not too small, just right kind of spot. So
the 2 gold can certainly hurt.
I was definitely afraid it would be like a 4.
The 2 gold can definitely, no, if at 4, that card's unplayable.
Yeah,
I think that card's unplayable at 4 reserve, but 2 gold can hurt. It really can.
It can, which is, why I'm excited to be playing Tyrell there with the army.
For sure. I think
this was a solid boost.
Speaking of that, because I think Tyrell's power level really went up a ton with being able to have a reliable on-demand reset that doesn't rely on getting Varus on the board. So
I agree.
I want to talk just briefly. I know we're pushing a long episode here, but I don't mind. I want to talk about where you think the factions are at this point in a post-Valor world. And I know we got a ton of other cards coming down the pipe and all these different things that could affect it and, its popularity and whatnot. But right now, I think that there is a good barometer being set.
It's tough for me to maybe give the houses hard numerical ratings if we were to go 1 to 8 on this.
Then maybe,
but I
maybe
could probably
we could
drop them into top, middle, and bottom tier.
Yeah,
in
I was thinking more like that.
Valor.
Yeah, I was thinking more like that because it's there is a shift in power here, at least presumably, and I think that you and I may differ on certain factions, because I think certain factions can go either way on this. So I'm So I'm curious where you come out on it at the moment. Let's see if we can predict the meta.
Okay. Let's see here. I guess I'll start at the top. The obvious one here that is still kind of going to be up there, I think, is going to be Lannister on the back largely mm-hmm. of the income, but as well with the bouncing options, they can kind of play having characters in play during the plot phase.
Oh, Tower of the Hand got so good.
Yeah.
Tower of the Hand got so good.
As well, I do think, despite a couple weaknesses, certainly in the Intrigue Icon realm, I do think that the Greyjoy boosts up there on the back of their saves. And, of course, the smaller the boards are, the easier it is to get that unopposed and the bigger impact the stealth has.
Yep.
Plus, Seastone Chair, of course. If you've got the mass wipe to knock out duplicates and saves, and then Seastone Chair to
then replace the claim afterward. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So I think that's up there. You know, I do actually this one we may differ on. I actually think that this does help Night's Watch, despite the fact that Night's Watch wants to go wide in a lot of builds, and Valor does preclude that some. I think that with Valor kind of limiting the number of characters on the board, it also potentially means there are less problem characters that Night's Watch has to deal with on the other side of the board. And with their lower cost curve, I think they have an easier time getting the bodies back out that they need. Plus, their main draw engine dodges Valor, like we were just talking about with the Lannister.
Those birds are so good.
Yeah.
So is Aerie.
So let's see. What, that's three out of the eight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that might be what I'm putting in the top section at the moment. I think I probably put Martell and Tyrell both still in the middle section, even though I think they both benefit out of this. Tyrell, because of being able to leverage extra income like the Arbor as a location, is the huge thing, but also a solid amount of draw and card filter helping there a lot. But I think the control attachments in Martell get a big boost, like we talked about some last week. I think that's pretty great for any of that's not terminal. So that gets me to five. Stark, I think, probably in the middle realm for me as well. They're fast. They get a lot of power out there. They've got some saves, but their power is still on characters. So I can see them having some issues with you know, larger mass wipes, although this one is one that would power up Caitlyn, the Wolves Caitlyn, that is. So, yeah, maybe not great. Then that leaves us with Bera, I think, probably still in the middle realm. Their Neil, I think, is a great way to handle characters that are left on the board after a reset like Valor, but they are also awfully dependent on a few key characters to keep that engine rolling. So if something happens...
That sounds vaguely reminiscent of a conversation we had earlier.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that leaves them in the middle as well. I think, honestly, maybe the only one that I put down at the bottom out of this is going to be Targaryen.
Oh.
I know that sounds weird... But
card draw city, baby.
Yeah, some card draw.
And
but I also
fire and blood.
Yes, but you gotta. Well, I guess if it's a hatchling, you can get it back into play.
Burn.
Like it still feels like some fairly specific, like things that you need to get those back. Whereas if you have a couple hatchlings die off or something, like you might be stuck not being able to play some of the stuff like Dracarys that
yeah.
you want to play when you need
yeah.
to.
For
like,
sure.
I feel like they are in a similar spot to Barra as far as
funeral pyre.
Wait, hold on. As far as needing a few key characters to make some specific engines run, but I feel like those engines for Targ, while good, like, are less specifically good at the smaller board the way the Barra Neil is.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, there we go. That's where I would do him. How about yourself?
It's really board dependent for that Targ deck, right? Because if they only are able to save mid-range dudes, then you're in tall cotton, right? But, like, if they're able to keep a big, high-strength bomb, you may be in trouble. I don't know. Yeah. I think that Lannister is still fine, right? Both with and against. And because even if your Tywin gets Valored away, I mean, you've got close call, and you can just top deck other good characters. like that's the crazy part about Lannister is just like
they probably have the broadest like good character base, right?
Yeah, I mean, just everything you draw has the two most important icons you want. Like it's military and intrigue, right? And if you don't get the power icons late game after a Valor, then you might still lose anyway, even if you're killing all their stuff. But I still think Lannister is a top of the pile. I think that I still think that just to go with your list, I think Greyjoy's still middle of the pack. I think Banner of the Kraken is sort of up there, but I think Greyjoy main is middle of the road. Just because it still feels like it's really heavily dependent on top decking. I think that Martell is sort of middle of the road because I think they have the greatest ability to potentially leverage Valor, but I feel like if they get caught with their pants down, then it really hurts.
I forgot to mention about Martell earlier is they're kind of like leave in play and do its thing location base.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like is less compared to other houses, and that does hurt some in a
What do you mean?
Valor environment, like when you look at other houses, like say Tyrell has the Arbor and Highgarden as a couple quick examples. Lannister has Tower or maybe Casterly
Tower and Harrenhal.
Harrenhal, yeah, stuff that's getting. Even Barra has
Red Keep and Chamber.
Yeah, which gives them something that sits on the board and kind of weathers Valor, but Martell doesn't really. I mean,
Boneway and Gaston are still pretty good.
Gaston doesn't sit though; it's temporary. You have to lose it.
You can play Gaston on a Valor turn and just. You can play Gaston on a Valor turn and just take the tempo hit.
You can. I just don't necessarily feel it's quite the same like standing kind of weathering capability that some of the other factions have when they're kind of sitting on a location base.
Yeah, I think that Martell is a faction to watch though, just because they want the game to go along, and in my experience, Valor's making it go more plots. So I think that Martell's faction to
that's
watch.
True.
To me, I think they're sort of middle of the pack right now because they haven't sort of recovered from the last like three chapter packs. You know, I think that Stark is sneaky good, still top tier. Summer is just incredible. Flipping Time of Wolves into Valor is just like almost insurmountable for an opponent who doesn't have the econ base set up and needs the reset. To grab Summer and then get your Arya back and immediately put a dupe on her, and so you have a stealth military, and that could be devastating if you can flip a March the next turn, March the Summer away, and then play her again. It's gross. And Stark tends to be running 3x of all their big dudes anyway. Bran cancels the events that can muck with your board in the first place. Winterfell still cancels shenanigans. Like, Stark's still in a really good spot. I think that Night's Watch is certifiably a top-tier deck now. Like, I don't think that we can say that they're tier 1.5 anymore. For all the reasons that you mentioned, but I just... like, Night's Watch just doesn't really care what an opponent's doing, right? Like, Night's Watch basically just, like, if you don't run into a first snow at the wrong time, Night's Watch just wins. So, like, I still think they're fine, and smaller boards are okay, especially with that stupid location, the Haunted Forest. Like, why did that card get printed? But okay. I think that Bera had a brief window of being in the best spot that it's been in a long time, at least mono faction, right? Or any banner that's not Kraken. Because I think Bera Kraken's a legitimate deck. But I think that Bera is sort of... I think that Bera has sunk a little bit just because if you Valor away a Bob and a Mel, man, you have just, like, wrecked their game plan, unless they got the Dom Suite set up, right? And I think Targ's in the middle of the pack, because I think that Targ actually doesn't mind a mass murder effect. There's some shenanigans that Targ can do with Stand and popping dudes back to hand, like Waking the Dragon and whatnot, that can and Blood of the Dragon, that can survive, and then, you know, Viserys getting Valored away, you know, you can trigger his reaction and pop off some other attachments, and I think they're middle of the road right now. So I think that really Tyrell is the one that I keep going back and forth on as to whether or not it's a legitimate top tier deck or if it's still maybe out of the doldrums, but sort of in the middle. I'm going to say that they're like in the 1.5 range. Even though I've played Tyrell almost exclusively like since before Gen Con, I think that there are really good Tyrell decks, but I think that it's hard to leverage anything except Valor in that deck, right? So I think I'd put Tyrell at like sort of the mid range between middle of the tiers and upper crust. So I think Lanny Stark and Watch are still the decks to beat.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much on the same page. On more than I think maybe you were expecting before we started into that.
Well, yeah, because I think that I thought you would be higher on Bera, and I thought you'd be lower on Watch.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I think what seals it for me is Watch is the kind of refill ability that they have an edge on in the economic environment that you were bringing up earlier in the debate.
Oh yeah, and Old Forest Hunter is just so stupid. Like, that dude's just so gross.
He's pretty dang handy.
Like, I was so wrong about so many cards in Night's Watch that now that certain things have been printed, I'm like, oh my god, I hate playing against this deck.
Well, does that segue well into our next topic, then?
Yeah, it's either that, or we can talk about predictions for 2017 in terms of, like, major tournaments.
I think let's save our 2017 predictions for our last section on this.
Sure.
Because we've only got two others, and then the 2017 predictions.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I think we were just about there to another one of our requests, which was that we hit on some of the cards that we feel we got really right or really wrong in reviews over the year. So I've got three in mind.
Are we talking about just cycle cards or core set too? Because I wasn't even like involved with any of the reviews for the core set and whatnot.
Yeah. I think just cycle cards.
I think we could do a little more than just like three. I mean, if we keep our discussion limited.
Well, maybe, but it depends on if I remember them.
Yeah,
like
I guess that's true.
What I said about them, that's the trick.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been that many cards released, so I kind of remember. You want to start with the first chapter pack?
Awesome. We're going by pack by pack?
I think that that's a reasonable way to do it, because I think that there's some things that I totally, like, missed on.
Out of the first pack, then... Jeez, looking to see. I think we rated the Hound well, but not as good as he turned out to be.
Yeah, he's an S.
Yeah, but at a glance at the rest of the pack, I don't think we were too far off on most of those.
I don't know, man. I think that support of the people was so dramatically overrated.
Yeah, that's fair. And that, I think, is something... I think the reason for that is something that's going to come up in some of my thoughts about other things that I already had in mind. And that is that locations turned out, I think, to be weakened a lot more in second edition than we were expecting in comparison to first edition. I really think we were expecting stuff after the core set to kind of hit that familiar stride. And while we've gotten some good ones, I don't think it's been quite in that sweet spot that we thought would make support of the people really playable.
Yeah, I agree. I also think the long plan may have been underrated.
Maybe. I don't remember now how well. We probably kind of gave it kind of a middling thing.
Well, I mean,
it does turn out to be quite good.
There was that month where Martell Lion just like dominated the meta with, if you had Tyrion on the first turn, the long plan was your flipped plot. It was just, yeah. It was just gross, right?
At least we were down on Merchant Prince, and we deserved to be.
Yeah, we were totally right on, and we were right on the Sea Stone Chair, of course. I think that's pretty much it for me. I mean, Will may have been a little overrated. I'm not talking about the card.
That's true. Should be downgraded from championship level player to like regional level player.
To mix the cut at regional because a billion guys cheated. That's all I got.
Maybe that's just foreshadowing for how Tyrion's gonna win in the books.
Nice.
I tried.
I think the second pack was pretty spot on. Can I just talk real briefly though about Winterfell Castle?
In the
second pack.
Pack there? Yeah.
So everybody thought that Winterfell Castle was terrible, and I think that its value has actually increased quite a bit. I think that it like isn't an unplayable card anymore. Every Stark deck that I've ever seen is just like packing a bunch of uniques, and I've seen a bunch of decks that are coming up lately that are running one copy of it just in case.
That's what I was going to say. I think it has definitely made it to a 1X status in a lot of decks. But I am curious if it stays that way with Valor. You know, you can only go dupe heavy on so many of those uniques in Stark going forward. So I wonder if that hurts the viability of Winterfell Castle a little bit.
I don't know. Stark has a box, so they've got a bunch of crap that you can still cram into a deck.
Yeah. You know, I feel
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we might have underrated trading a little bit. I feel like we waffled a lot on it, and nobody was really quite certain how to come down on it as far as that drawback. And I think extensive play has shown that drawback is pretty negligible.
Yeah, that plot was for a long time and still might be like one of the top like three most important plots in the game.
Yeah.
It might still be.
I feel like we nailed it pretty well on Nymeria though.
Yeah, I mean how could you miss on that, right?
Yeah. And otherwise I'm not seeing too much that stands out to me in this pack.
Nah, me neither. I think the next pack, though, Roderick was so overrated, and so was Marin Heat. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the meta did not wind up supporting that as long as we kind of hoped, so to speak. I mean, that was everywhere for, you know, that month until the next pack dropped, basically.
Yeah, basically. Oh, and we whiffed on the mountain. Oh my God, did we whiff on the mountain?
I mean, it's a random crapshoot, right? Just like his ability.
Yeah, it's totally a random crapshoot, except like he has 10 strength and renown, and just like murders dudes. And then the grossest underrated card that may have been, I never bet against my family.
Yeah, I was about to say, we definitely underrated that.
For sure.
I know that I have much more to say about that. And I
we just missed on this pack, didn't we? Because the Boneway ended up being good.
Whoa, I defended the Boneway in the review.
Yeah, I gave it a straight F.
That was a card I was going to talk about. I defended that.
Yeah, I gave it a straight F, and it turned out to be pretty good. The Lord of the Crossing agenda, I think, was appropriately rated.
I feel like
Practice Blade. We totally underestimated Practice Blade.
We definitely did underestimate Practice
Blade. I guess we didn't really know Haldr was coming out, so.
Right. But I'm looking back here at Newly Made Lord. I do feel like, as of right now, we probably overestimated Newly Made Lord.
Probably
and
so.
I think it's that same location problem we had with Support of the People. We just expected locations, like, as a card type, to be better.
Mm-hmm. So, the next one coming along, Haldr, we all missed.
Yeah. Or, wait a minute. Okay, yes, I did click on the right pack. Sorry, for a minute there, I thought I clicked on the
right pack. We just straight up missed on Haldr.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was so easy to gloss over the ore attachment line, and, like, who knew Kraven was coming at the time?
Right. Oof. Boy. Yeah, I think that was pretty much it, though.
Yeah, looking at the rest of it, I feel like we were mostly pretty close. I do think, in retrospect, maybe Aaron overhyped for Snow of Winter, certainly at this point.
Disagree.
Still good.
No, but in retrospect, though, it was like, it was the card that you still build with it in mind. Like, even if people aren't running it, you still have to build a deck where you've got enough, like, 4 to 5 cost guys to stick around on the board to not just get wrecked. I think that card is consciously
thinking about it. Maybe I just have it ingrained now.
Yeah, it's still incredible.
The Arbor was in this pack.
Oh,
I
yeah.
feel like the Arbor, I think we overrated it a little bit at the time. Because I do think we were expecting Tyrell, like, as a house, to get stuff that it just didn't.
I think it's only come around now that Valor's out. Yeah, the duplicating rule really hurt.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Well, because, there was a Tyrell Fealty deck.
Realized that properly at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there was a Tyrell Fealty deck at that point that was pretty good. That was just a Varus machine. And it just folded to Greyjoy, because you couldn't dupe the Arbor and play more economy. So, next, I feel like we, this is Calm or Westeros, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we overrated Winterfell Crypt. Like, nobody plays that card.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think we might have underrated Greyjoy's Vanguard. I don't have a lot of memory of talking about it, so who knows?
It's a really good melee card. I never play this card in Joust.
Really?
Never. It has never made it into a starting deck I've made for Joust.
I have definitely played it. Andy's phenomenal in melee.
Oh, he's ridiculous in melee. Yeah, he's a beard in melee for sure. I think we I personally really liked Stinking Drunk when it first came out, and I still like Stinking Drunk, and it's making its way into a lot of Vera builds. So I think that some people underrated it. I think I was right about that card though. I like Stinking Drunk a lot.
I'm not seeing much else in this pack. I seem to remember we probably nailed it on Miriam's Tour. She's extremely...
Oh, she's stupid. Oh, Nightmares. I think we underrated Nightmares.
Yeah, I think we might have. It has become the place it was in first ed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's become such a staple. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
So then the last pack of the first cycle was True Steel, and boy, did I miss the boat on Septa Mordain.
Septa Mordane.
Gosh, she's so good. Like, she's incredible. Especially in this environment.
Man. Well, okay. She's really good. As a pseudo save for Arya.
She's really, really good. Oh, we overrated old Bear's Raven.
Yeah, still didn't make him playable, did it?
No, not at all.
I think we might have overrated Barristan Selmy, or at least I personally did.
I don't think so.
I've played more, I've wound up pulling copies of him and cutting him to make room and stuff. I think he's okay.
I think he's a solid 1X.
I feel like he's not quite cutting his weight.
I guess it depends on what kind of Bear deck you're running. Yeah, if you're running like the Neil stuff, then he may not find more than one slot, but if you're doing the go first, like win the power challenge deck, he's not bad.
And I definitely overrated Dagmar Clefjaw. Again, the location issue.
I didn't. I was like, this guy sucks. Close call. Underrated, I think.
I think probably so. I'm close call even before Valor came out for the last several months has almost become like my first grab when I build the deck.
I play a copy of Close Call in almost every deck I build. It's a non-chokeable plot that even if you only put an inconsequential non-unique character back into your discard pile, you still draw a card. It's good gold. It's a really good plot. Super flexible. God, the Wolves box. What did we fail on?
So many cards here.
Wolves of the North.
We did not Wolves fail on Bear Island Loyalist.
No, we didn't. We totally failed on Wolves of the North, though. Because I remember I was on that review episode, and we were all... Greg and I were really interested in this card, and...
Right.
Nobody plays this shit.
Nope.
Osha, I think, was a little bit overrated. Mm-hmm. I think that cost slot in Stark just became really awkward because of the influx of cards.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to kind of look here at different stuff. The Winterfell Heart Tree.
No, that card, it's terrible.
I think I overrated it a little bit.
Rickon got overrated for sure. A lot of Stark decks are not finding room for Rickon right now.
I'm pretty certain I did not like Rickon.
I did just because he was a one-drop unique Stark character.
Ugh.
Yeah, he's... And to go along with your theme about locations, Frozen Solid.
Yeah.
Exactly. It might be creeping its way back in.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Night's Watch does want to run some locations at least.
I don't know. Everything else seems like we pretty much were within the realm of possibilities. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Looking here at the rest of the list, we're starting to get our feet under us a little better. So we'll pack one of this cycle.
Yeah, because I think that's a valid comment, because I think that, like, I didn't really play much first edition, but I played the CCG, so I had some, like, preconceived notions as to, like, what was efficient and what wasn't. And, I mean, it really took until, like, pack 4 of cycle 1 to really realize, like, oh, this is how this game plays, right?
Yeah.
And in terms of rating cards in a vacuum. In terms of rating cards in a vacuum, like...
It's tough.
It is. It's really tough. Oh god, yeah, this pack. We nailed it on Aerie and the White Tree, and those cards are stupid.
I think we were off on Captain's Daughter. I feel like we overrated.
I still hate that card. Cannot stand that card. I think that card sucks.
I think it has definitely played out that way in the end.
I can't really think of anything else that's even remotely worth talking about right there, right?
Yeah. Because there was a big hoopla about Pyromancers, but I think we pretty accurately were like, man, that's a lot of like boxes to tick off before you can use that.
For sure.
Okay.
So I think I don't know. Kraven, we were totally right about. That card is stupid. I think we rated Venomous Blade pretty appropriately. I think the decks that you do see it in, it does work when you see it, and it's appropriately costed to not be oppressive. Like, it's legit. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Seeing much.
I think we underrated the seasons. I've said that before, and I think we underrated the seasons.
I think we underrated the season plots. Maybe not the agendas, but I think Summer Harvest and Winter Festival, I think we might have underrated.
I don't know. I think we underrated the agendas. I really do. I really think we underrated the agendas. Like, Landing Kings of Winter is still good. I think that you'll see some more Targ. I think you'll see some Targ Summer. I think you'll see some more Bera Summer. I don't think we inappropriately rated those really at all. You know what card we totally nailed it on though? Ours is the Old Way. Because that card absolutely blows.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's like it's competing with Brandon's Gift.
Oh, I think that definitely sends us to the next pack.
Man. It's competing with Brandon's Gift. So I think that we overrated Bear Island a little bit.
Yes, I think you were right. We
just
were
a little
really excited about that. If Bear Island had been too cost, I think we would have been more spot on. But
I think it's just an awkward cost, right?
Issues with trying to get locations and just kind of like bled out across the board.
Yeah, Renly has been incredible. Like one of my like top three favorite cards in the game. It's like Valor, Varus, Renly. Like those are my favorite cards in the game. Renly's amazing.
Wow, those are good choices. I mean, I do like Renly. I've had the chance to play with him some now. But yeah, I mean, looking at the rest of this particular pack, I mean, I feel like a couple hosts probably overrated this guy. I don't feel like he's making as many decks in the end as he was hyped to at first.
But no, I think Valor really, really hurts, right? I feel like you can't. Well, and then the everybody's proclivity for resets is sort of increasing, right? Like, because like people are running either First Snow or Wildfire or Valor or some combination of two of those, and like Hot Pie just doesn't stick around, and he doesn't do anything for you in challenges. He's just kind of awkward. I don't know. At least that's been my impression so far. So what was after that? And then we had this pack, right? The Lions box came out first, but like in terms of packs, this is the one that came out.
Right, right. And that's been so recent. I'm not sure we've had time to
readjust
anything.
Nah. Same with the Lions box. I don't know. I think that people haven't quite figured out Reigns. There's a couple builds.
The games I've played with it since then, I've been disappointed.
Oh, I've been super impressed. I love that card.
I just haven't either been unable to win the intrigue by five when I need a plot effect, or when I can win by five, don't need / want any of those plot effects. So,
but I think that's the power of the agenda. Like, it's really not so much as like, it's not so much about triggering it as much as possible, so much as it is just like feigning this effect that you could pull off if your opponent doesn't make sure that they commit.
Sort of, but you do still need to have the ability to trigger it when you need it. And that I think has been what has hurt my impression of it more, is that
sure, I've not having a Wildfire games on demand. Yeah,
I've had several games where I've needed it in the first couple turns but couldn't get it.
Sure. then it seems appropriately balanced to me.
Very possibly. Very possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I guess those are the cards that I think I got wrong. I mean, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but I was wrong on a lot now that I think about it.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of glossed over. I'm sure if listeners were to really go back and pick apart our reviews, they'd find more, but...
That's just what I remember off the top of my head, you know.
Yeah. It's an overview. I think that covers the retrospective there on some of our card ratings. So we've got another listener request. And this one is arguably my favorite. This is for whale sounds.
I can't take it anymore, Will. You got to stop.
Oh man, I was actually about to hit the button there to turn it off. I just wanted to go for that beat where it just went just a hair too long, and you wonder if it's ever going to stop.
Yeah, Britt, what the hell? You should be being a dad and stuff, not requesting whale sounds. And Will, we have reached a new low.
Or a new high, I think, depending on how you look at it. Our Australian listeners,
for them, sure. By the way,
that's not a whale joke. That's a being on the bottom of the earth joke. I just want to clarify that for everyone.
Major props to the fish family. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure enough. Congratulations.
That kid is so lucky to have them as parents. Like, what a cool household to grow up in.
For show.
Yeah. Love you, Britt. Love you, Lauren. What were we doing next after that? Whatever.
After that, I think is our final one.
How do you come back from that?
I don't know. I don't know. Part of me thought we should just end the episode there, but then I thought, no, it's more fun if folks have to deal with it in the middle. Sort of middle. We only have one more request after this, and this is for 2017 predictions. So, man, what do we predict in 2017?
I have an idea.
Okay.
Night's Watch is the new Lannister.
I think we are headed that way. They are probably the second favorite bandwagon house down here in my meta.
It's going to be stupid.
Everyone turned up last week with Vera, and then we all talked about Night's Watch, and I know essentially everyone built a Night's Watch deck either that night or the day afterwards, so next week is going to be Night's Watch galore.
Which does have a bad matchup against Vera, so Vera could see some, we'll see.
We'll see. One guy did want to just build the most uber of dominance decks to play against Night's Watch decks and just try to race them on the not initiating challenges but still trying to claim power game.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Chamber can sometimes really screw up a wall. Yeah.
Yeah, depending on the timing of when both of you get those online.
Yeah, and if you, it depends also on the plot deck tech, right?
Right.
If somebody has a cheeky summer plot in there to offset somebody's winter festival, or a fortified position or something.
But hey, if the Bear player is also actually playing White Ravens and trying to do that, summer plot just fuels them. They just have to really not lose dominance.
Yeah. That is interesting, whether or not White Raven is actually good.
In general, I don't think it is, but I'm curious to see this deck in action and to see if we can help this guy make it work.
That would be cool, yeah. I think that in 2017, a way too early prediction that Night's Watch will win at least 2 Road to Stalic events. It will win Gen Con or Worlds, one of the two, and it will overrepresent in the cut at Stalic.
Nice. Ooh, those are big predictions.
I think that it's going to be gross.
Okay. Tell you what, I've got some big predictions for 2017 as well. You ready for this? I figured out how I'm going to top you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
2017, mine is also, at least the first part of it, is also organized play related. In 2017, I predict that Asmodee North America Fantasy Flight Games actually throws in the towel and does away with organized play for their LCGs.
Just
decides, you know what? It's just not worth half-assing anymore.
Do you think that this
is easier to stop than whole-ass it?
What? But so, do you think that that's in any way, shape, or form due to the release of a new collectible game and another cooperative game?
That was going to be my corollary or connection to that. It was going to be that is going to be on the backs of a refocus on collectible games, and that Destiny just blows things out of the water. So they double down efforts on CCG or CDG or both, collectible dice games, for organized play, and then decide to launch other properties using the same engine as Destiny. That kind of dueling, you know, kind of weapon fighting thing fits nearly like every licensed property that they still have, right? Like, it's so easy.
I will not play another collectible
Thrones or Lord of the Rings. Maybe not Netrunner, but you know.
Yeah, whatever. I won't play it.
So there's my big prediction.
That is a bold prediction, yeah.
Bold but true. Okay, maybe not true. We'll see.
Man, that is super bold. I hope you're not right, but that's not an unconvincing argument. and as soon as you said it, I was like, oh yeah. Specific to Thrones, man. I mean, other than Night's Watch, I guess. I will predict that. The player base decreases by a significant percentage when L5R drops.
Yes, I agree. I agree, though follow-up after that, back to organized play, I am also going to say that within a year of that, that the L5R player base will have dropped off significantly when they realize they will not get the same level of involvement and organization that they were accustomed to as a CCG.
That is so interesting. Man, I'm still reeling from the idea that there may not be organized play for Thrones, and that
and there you go, L5R. That's another license that you slap that onto the Destiny rules engine and just roll with it.
Yeah, probably so.
Get it? Roll with it.
Wow, that's so sad.
my joke.
Yeah, everything about it. Really, I mean, the joke is actually not bad, but.
Well, thank you.
Dang, dude, you just like totally depressed me toward the end of the episode. I hope that's not
really intended to be depressing. I don't actually really think it will happen. I just wanted to have something outlandish.
But I think that that's. Predict. But I don't think that that's outside of the realm of possibilities. Maybe not next year, but the year after, right?
Maybe
if they start,
depending on how Destiny holds up.
Yeah, well, I mean, judging by our local stores, it's like taking over everything, so.
Yeah. Yep, same here.
Man, okay then.
Okay. Here, if you're having a little trouble, I'm gonna throw something else.
I was gonna say, I had like a couple of them, and now I can't even think of them, because I'm just like thinking about, yeah.
Here you go, here's something more positive. Assuming that organized play does continue, that we do get an FAQ update in 2017 that introduces some kind of fix to the card pool, but that may or may not be what first edition players are used to thinking of as the restricted list. That possibly FFG will look at trying to come up with some more kind of directly tied to the game mechanics way of tackling that.
Interesting.
Kind of like the most wanted list in Netrunner ties into the influence amount that people have available. Maybe rather than looking at a restricted list, maybe they look at making more cards loyal or something like that.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting. As other Thrones-related stuff, I don't know that I really have much other than I think that Night's Watch is just going to just absolutely burn and pillage its way through huge tournaments.
But also additional prediction related to that. Pillage itself will remain bad.
I don't agree. I will predict that by the end of 17, there is a tier 1.5 to tier 2 pillage deck.
Whew.
That can win a store championship.
Okay. But it'll have to win a store championship in 2018.
I guess that's true. I mean, hell, there might even be one now. I mean, like, did you see that list, the Lanny Kraken one that went 5-2 at Stalag?
You know, I did not.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's legit.
Okay.
Dude was just wrecking people with New Tywin.
I should check that out.
Just wrecking people with New Tywin. And then the Kings of Salt and Rock for some power gain. Yeah, it was a thing. That's really all I got, man.
Yeah, I think that's all I have for 2017 predictions as well. So I think that was pretty good. I think, you know, some listener topics, some good, some bad, some weird, but it was a good episode overall, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for 2016. From the White Book, no props and slops this episode because, well, effectively the whole thing really was kind of props and slops anyway. So we're gonna take a few weeks off. We're gonna hit you back in the new year. Don't forget the meme contest.
That meme contest is gonna put us firmly in
the danger zone. By the by, if anybody is listening to the Easter egg this week and they happen to play Hearthstone, I've gotten back in here pretty much with the release of Gadget Zan. So hit me up as a friend request on there. That is going to be Kenon first, KENNON, and then the digit 1ST @hotmail.com.